Good morning, everybody. So, as I introduced yesterday, the topic of today is QCD. So yesterday we have learned why we need this new symmetry for mesons and baryons. Now let's see how we can write down the last pieces of the standard model Lagrangian that includes SU3 interactions. So. So as I said yesterday, since we have new interactions, we need new force carriers. So these are the gluons. This is the kinetic terms of these are the kinetic terms of the gluons. Now we have to introduce a new index, that is this A index here. That is a SU3 index. And it runs between 1 and 8. Okay. So this is the part that it just contains gluons. Then we have to understand how we write down the interaction of these gluons with the quarks of the standard model. Okay. So what we have to write down is the kinetic term for the quarks. So here I'm using a four-component notation. This again, this index here, this index j, is an index of SU3. This time we have learned that we have three types of quarks depending on the color. Okay. So here, this index here will be a j equal to 1, 2, 3, depending on the color. Okay. So let me write the last term, and then we discuss a little bit about this, this Lagrangian. Then we have some mass term for the quarks. Again, this is a SU3 index. The same J is here, you have to sum over, and this is your diagonal mass matrix, okay? So this is, in general, if you take basically a quark, and you want to understand what is the interaction of this quark with gluons, and how you can write down all the terms of your Lagrangian, right? Now, in principle, we know that quarks do not only carry a color index, but also a flavor index. We have already learned with Gordon that we have three flavors, right? So we have flavor 1, 2, 3. So in principle, here should put also an index for flavor, right? Not only for the SU3. But actually, what we know is that SU3 interactions are blind for flavor. So basically, every time we have a flavor index, the index will be diagonal, okay? So that's why here I'm not putting any flavor index. I could put an additional index, like an index I here, then I'm summing over, but then everything is diagonal, okay? So for this reason, I think it's kind of easier not to put any flavor index, but then we have to keep in mind that we are summing over the several flavors, okay? So QCD is flavor blind. Okay, so let's see how can we write down more explicitly all these terms. So first of all, we have this kinetic term here for the fermion psi. So this covariant derivative can be written in explicit form this way. These are the gamma matrices that Gordon already introduced. That's right. You're familiar with this, I guess. And now we have to understand how to write down this derivative here. Okay? So this covariant derivative, d mu, will be equal to partial derivative plus I so now so we want to write down explicitly the term that involves the interaction of our quarks with gluons. So now here we see that we have a new coupling constant, Gs, that is the coupling constant of SU3 of QCD. Okay? These are our gluon fields. Again, we have already learned from here that this index A goes from 1 to 8. Okay? And then finally, these TA are the generators of SU3. So you see, this notation here should be relatively similar to the notation that Gordon used and what we have learned already for SU2. Okay? Of course, now we have different fields, different coupling constant, and different generators of SU3 instead of SU2. Okay? So let's see how to write down these generators here. These won't be anymore the Pauli matrices, but are the Gell-Mann matrices. So this TA. So one can write down the following way. So this is simply a normalization that is typically used, because then we can write down the lambdas. I put them explicitly so that you know, you have a reference also to do exercises. So typically the convention is the following. So you have your first Gell-Mann matrix. This is written in this way. Of course, these are 3 × 3 matrices because we are speaking about color, right? So this is the first one. Then we have 2. A bit lengthy to write them down, but let me do it for completeness. There. And then finally, lambda 8, square root of 3. Okay. So these guys are Hermitian traceless matrices. And obey to this commutation and anti-commutation relations. So if you take two of them, this is how they commute. So these are called structure constant. And this quantity here is totally anti-symmetric if you exchange two of these indexes. Then finally, you can write down also the anti-commutation. So now you need something that is symmetric. And you have only two possible tensors that you can write down that are symmetric under exchange of two of these color indexes. So you have the delta matrix, 3×3 matrix, plus you have this tensor here. And this guy is a totally symmetric, okay? So as you see, it's kind of similar to the SU2 interactions that we have already learned, of course with some differences and of course with more fields since we have two gluons, eight of gluons, sorry. Okay. Questions?
Sorry, the fiddly symmetric tensor doesn't seem like
sorry, say it again?
The totally symmetric tensor doesn't, I don't know how that's defined. Is that just one for everything?
Yeah, you can, try to write it down, but it's just totally symmetric against any of the change of indexes. Yeah. Okay, so basically this gives you all the ingredients to write down this first part here. So as you will see in the following, when we write down the Feynman rules for QCD, this term here will give you the interaction of two quarks with one gluon, as you can see already from here. Now let's see how we can expand this kinetic term for gluons, okay? Because this is actually quite different than what we have learned for QED, for example, okay? So let's take our term F mu nu A. So F mu nu A can be written as a partial derivative of our gluon field minus, you have to exchange indexes, plus okay, so I think you should be familiar with this. This is similar to what we got for QED, okay? But then there is this extra term here that is actually arising only for our gluons, for our QCD, okay? That's right? So you can already guess from here that then when you plug in and you compute this kinetic term, then because of this additional term here, you'll have also interactions like of four gluons or three gluons, right? And this was not happening in QED when where we knew that we have only interaction of two photons, okay? Okay, so now we know also how to expand this term here of the Lagrangian. Then, of course, for completeness, I'm putting some mass terms. Gordon told you already everything about the mass generation of quarks in the standard model. So this was just to remind you that you have also some mass terms for quarks. And these mass terms are actually diagonal under QCD, under this index J, okay? So this is just a reminder of quarks have mass. So let's work out the Feynman rules for QCD, okay? So we'll have vertices like this, where here you have a gluon, here you have quarks. Okay. Now let me write all the indexes that we need. So this mu is a Lorentz index. These other indexes here are indexes for color, okay? Sorry, say it again? Yes, sorry. Yeah, sometimes I am too brief, but definitely. Okay? Yeah. Thanks for the comment. So this guy is coming, as we said, from this covariant derivative here, okay? So we'll have, okay, nine. Then our strong coupling constant, right? This matrix that is giving us the right Lorentz structure. And then we'll have the generators of SU3. So these are the generators TA that I defined there. 3 times 3 matrices, and I and J are the elements of the matrix. Okay? So again, we'll have I and J equal to 1, 2, 3, and this A equal to 1, 2, 8. Okay? So now we know how quarks interact with gluons. Okay? Now let's see what happens to the auto-interactions of gluons, actually. Okay? So what we have is a 3 gluon vertex. So we have gluon, gluon. Now we have several indexes to specify. So we'll have a mu, a nu, rho. And then we have several momenta here that are flowing in these legs. So we have a momentum K, P, and Q. Of course, this has nothing to do with a quark. I call it Q, but okay. And then, so again, this term here comes from here. Once that you expand the square, okay? We'll have dependence on one strong coupling. So we'll have to take one of these terms and one of these terms, right? So we'll have this. Then you have this structure constant. So if ABC. To put your Lorentz structure, so you have a G mu nu, and then some momentum dependence that that is coming once that you compute this partial derivative. Okay? So we'll have a minus b rho plus right. Right. Right.
So, I was going to ask, like, the diagram looks like it's got three completely symmetric, like, they look like the same, like, symmetrical terms, whereas, like, the actual term that's written down has got one derivative of A.
Right. So, this. Yeah, so you can see the symmetry properties if you. If you're thinking to exchange one Lorentz index, right? And actually, you see that if you exchange Lorentz indexes here, you get something that is anti-symmetric. That's right. If you exchange mu and nu,
okay.
Right?
I guess what I meant to say
with
that, like, the diagram looks like it, you would expect maybe, like, three, just A, but it's actually three
Right, right.
And so I guess what I guess the question is, why does a derivative of A get represented as a gluon just as A does?
Right. So so you're wondering about symmetry properties of this vertex, because from here you have two A's, from here you get a derivative of A.
Right.
The point is that you have to take all the combinations of them, right? And that's why you get all these three terms here, okay, that should respect the symmetry properties of this guy here. So you don't have to think simply about taking one of this term and one of this term, but you have all the several combinations, right?
Okay.
Maybe.
I see what you're saying. Like, you take a sum so that you, the
right,
ends up on all of them.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So maybe. You can try so to simply expand everything and then see if you get this right expression here. In case you have problems, you can let me know in case.
I know, right. I see what you mean. Like, I see that you get a symmetric sum, but it's just that you still, in the end, it's like a symmetric sum of thing objects, which are like derivative
right.
of A and then AA.
Right.
And as opposed to just AAA.
Right.
So I guess that's my question, is that why does derivative of A get depicted the same in a diagram as A?
Yeah, I understand what you mean, but.
I can ask you later.
Right.
Am I right in thinking, like, just as a, my naive way of thinking about it is, mm-hmm. If I want to, like, look at this properly, I'm going to put it under an action, at which point I can integrate by parts to put that derivative on whichever A I want.
Right.
So under that, they're all kind of.
Combinations of
it is symmetrical,
right.
But it's not. It's still not AAA.
Right. You shouldn't treat any of the A's separate to another because I can't put the derivative on whichever one I choose.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying that's like
a answer. I understand that it's symmetrical. Mm-hmm. It's just that I would have expected it, if I were to look at this diagram, I would have expected the corresponding term to be AAA.
Well, yeah. You see also this expression here that you have some momentum dependence, right? A momentum dependence, you pick momentum dependence as long as you have a derivative of this Coulomb field.
Eight.
Right?
Okay.
But, yeah.
Okay. I see. It's just saying.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so let me. Okay, so then we have actually last vertex, that is now a four gluon vertex, right? So okay, it's a little bit long to write, but so we'll have all our indexes 0, sigma, Now, of course, this term here, now it comes simply from taking the square of this, okay? So that's why we could already expect a dependence that goes like the square of our strong coupling, okay? And then actually, yeah, you have to work out several combinations and be careful with indexes. So I can give you kind of a long expression for that. Probably is useful, as I said, for you for doing exercises. So let me write down the entire form. So of course, now we don't expect any more momentum dependence, right? We have this. And then a last term. So again, probably a good exercise to understand a little bit better how it works is also, you know, to understand the symmetry properties of this expression, okay? If you, you know, you exchange some of these color indexes. So basically, these are all the vertexes that we need to understand, you know, these new interactions of QCD. Then of course, you know, we will have the propagator of the quark and of the gluon, but this is a quite similar to what we have already learned for QED, because we'll have, so in terms of propagators, we'll have this propagator for the quark. We have a momentum P, A and B. So I think should have already seen this type of propagator with Gordon. So we'll have something like P slash plus M over P square minus M square plus I epsilon. So this is something that we should already know. The last piece of information that we need is to understand how we treat color indexes. So we have two color indexes, and then we have to contract them, and we'll have a delta AD. Okay. So this is the only new thing compared to what Gordon already told you for a propagator of a fermion. And then the propagator for the gluon. Will be of this form. Again, this should be something quite familiar to you. But then again, we have to put these color indexes. So again, we'll have something like delta AB. So this is, in principle, nothing new. Of course, since we have to introduce new interactions, the color interactions, then we have to take care of this additional index, OK? So this is all we need of QCD. Of course, so I just mentioned to you quarks. because we know that other fermions like the leptons are not charged under these interactions. So they're singlet under these interactions. So you won't have couplings like these for two leptons, okay? And then also the Higgs boson that Gordon already introduced to you doesn't see color, so you won't have any interaction at first, at the three level of a Higgs, some Higgs with gluons, okay? So now we can start to play with QCD, actually, and let's try to understand some of its properties. So what I wanted to discuss a little bit with you, and then actually we'll have you will have a tutorial about this, is the beta function of QCD. Actually, Gordon and I went quite a bit into the details of the beta function of QED. I don't want to go so much into the details of the beta function of QCD. As I said, you will have a tutorial. But I want to give you some physical intuition and physical understanding of the beta function of QCD. Okay? So let me sketch the computation and give you the result. And in particular, let's understand the physical meaning. Okay? So what we'll have to do to compute the beta function of QCD is, again, understand how we can renormalize this theory that I presented here. Okay? So you will have some renormalization constant. So you will have your gluon renormalized, that is equal to some renormalization constant. Times the Baer field. So this we have already seen for QED, right? Then you will have to renormalize your quark field. You will have another renormalization constant times the Baer field. And then the same for our strong coupling constant for the mass term. So the renormalized coupling constant as Z3 to the 1/2 We have already seen yesterday, actually, this mass scale dependence for the coupling constant of QED. Okay? And then finally, your mass, the renormalized mass as and then basically what we have to do is to start to compute all these several renormalization constants, okay? So basically, we'll have to compute diagrams like this.
Why does this strong coupling constant have the same renormalization as the
So actually, we should have, so Gordon, I think, discussed with you for QED how it was working. So in principle, you will have this times some other renormalization constant. But actually, because of gauge symmetry, turns out that these two are the same, basically. So yeah, I agree. I'm going a little bit fast, but it's really the same as for QED in for this respect. So yeah, if there is some doubts about QED, let's discuss a little bit more. But it's the same. So the diagrams that we'll have to compute are these type of diagrams, diagrams where you have two gluons in the external legs and the fermion in the loop. Actually, this is very, very similar to what we have computed for QED, right? Where here we are putting photons, and here we are putting an electron, right? But then we have to keep in mind that we have a completely new class of diagrams that we have to compute, that was not arising in QED. And these are the diagrams that contain some vertex with more than two gluons. So we have, as we have seen, we have vertexes with three gluons, right? So we'll have to compute diagrams like this, okay? And diagrams like this, where here you have a four gluon interaction, okay? So as you see from here, the computation is rather more complicated than for QED. We have a lot of more diagrams, okay? So I think, so my plan was not to go into the details of this because I think there are still several very interesting topics of standard model that I would like to discuss with you before that the course ends. So here is a lot technical. Again, you will go into the details for this tutorial. Okay. What I want to tell you is the following. So suppose, I put a suppose, that you are able to compute all these diagrams, okay? And then following a similar prescription as we have seen for QED, you're able to compute the beta function of QCD, okay? So you have your beta function. And what you see is that you get a result that look like this. So we'll have so let me explain a little bit this expression. So this would be the final result for the beta function of QCD. Okay? So these are n is the number of colors. So three. Okay? So I'm keeping this general expression because, of course, we could do the same computation here, where we kept implicit the number of colors that we have in our theory. Then we know the number of colors that we have, so we can put it here. And this would be F is the number of flavors. So the number of flavors that you have for your quarks, we know that we have three up-type quarks, three down-type quarks, so this will be equal to six if you include all of them, okay? So you replace these numbers here, and what you get is 7 over 16 pi squared gs to the third power. Now you might ask why I'm giving you this result. I'm skipping all this lengthy computation to give you the last result. So the point is the following. There is this sign here that is a minus. If you remember from the lecture of yesterday for QED, we got that actually here there was a plus sign, right? Do you remember? So actually what it means is that since you have a minus sign here, if you go to, so here we have seen that this beta function gives the behavior of our coupling constant with some mass scale mu, right? So since this is negative, this is telling you that our coupling constant of QCD is getting smaller if you go to higher energies, okay? And this is what you typically hear, this, this behavior called asymptotic freedom. So going to higher energies, or smaller length, you get a weaker coupling, okay? So basically, this just this sign here that in principle from your computation could have been positive, right? It is negative, and it's telling you how indeed the quarks cannot be free, but they bind into baryons and mesons, as we have introduced yesterday, okay? So this is a really big result for QCD, because it's giving us really the physics of quarks, okay? So this is the result I wanted to give you, and you will go more into the details in this tutorial that you will get.
So the GS in this one, is it the bare constant or the
normalized? This is the renormalized constant, right? Thanks for catching that. So in the remaining 20 minutes, I wanted to start understanding a little bit more about the properties of our baryons and mesons. Okay. Now that I've given to you the Lagrangian of QCD, we have learned that we don't have free quarks. So the next step is, let's understand the physics of baryons and mesons, okay? Do you guys have questions? You guys? Go ahead.
I'm wondering, so QCD is really strong coupled at low.
Right.
And the QED coupled gets really strong at high.
Right, it's the opposite behavior. Right, right. Yes, yes. This is the completely opposite behavior. Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so let me see where I can erase. So, yesterday, I introduced the notion of mesons, okay? And we know that these are composed particles, so particles of two quarks together, okay? If you check in your notes, I've given to you the example of a kaon, right? So we know that we have kaons that are mesons composed by the strange quark and the down quark. Okay. So we'll have actually two states. One is the so-called K0, that is given by this combination of quarks. So an anti-strange and the down quark. And then we have the corresponding K0 bar that is instead given by a strange and an anti down quark. Okay? So these are our states for neutral kaons. Okay? Now, what we want to learn is the following. So we have these two states. We want to understand how the physical kaons are behaving, okay? And also we want to understand actually how we were able to see that the electroweak interactions are breaking CP, the CP symmetry, because we'll see that actually these kaons carry some CP properties that are actually broken by the electroweak interactions. Okay? So this is the plan. That's why I'm going this direction, just to have in mind the broad picture. Okay? So let's see, first of all, since I mentioned CP, how these two guys transform under CP. Okay? So under charge conjugation, question is how they transform under CP. Under charge conjugation, we see that we can pass from a K0 to K0 bar. That's right. Then also what we know is that the parity of these kaons is negative. Okay. So basically what we learn is that if we apply Cp to a k0 state, we get a minus k0 bar. This minus comes from this parity here, okay? And then vice versa, if we apply Cp to a k0 bar, we get a minus k0. Okay? So from here we see that these two states here that are Flavor eigenstates are not eigenstates for this operation of Cp, okay? Of course, we can write down some linear combination of these two states that is Cp invariant, right? So what we can do is to define our first state, K1, as some normalization times K0 minus K0 bar. And then we'll have the orthogonal state, the second kaon state, it is 1 over square root of 2, k0 plus k0 bar. Actually, if you do this exercise, you see that Cp applied to the first state gives me the first state again. And if you do the same for the second state, you get a minus sign. Okay, so we have found our Cp eigenvalues for this kaon system. Now, what we want to understand is, are actually these two states that we observe. So these are the mass eigenstates of the system or not, okay? So, question, physical. Are these states physical? Okay? So let me pass to this new blackboard. So if there was no mixing between this k0 and k0 bar, what we could write down for the time evolution of this kaon state is that our k0 as a function of the time is equal to some initial k0 state at t equal to 0 times our evolution. So we'll have the exponent of our Hamiltonian, right? Where our Hamiltonian, something of this type, so in general is a complex number, right? That can be written in this way. And then, of course, I can do a similar thing for the time evolution of our k0 bar state, right? So this should be familiar to you, I guess. Probably not for kaons, but in general for the time evolution of some state, right?
Should your time evolution be on the left? Like the axis.
So you mean, sorry, I'm not sure I catch your question.
Oh, just not like normally when I see time evolution, I see like you write exponential of minus I h t acting on the other side of it.
So you put it here.
Yeah.
Right. So this is So typically, I agree with you. This is simply one state, so you can, it's simply more typicative, you know, quantity. But yeah, I agree, typically people put it here. But it's the same, right, physical thing. Yeah. So actually, this is not what is happening. Because from experiments, we know that actually K0 and K0 bar are mixing. And we see from here that if this was the full story, we would have simply time evolution of K0 by its own and K0 bar by its own. So we have to understand how indeed this K0 and K0 bar are mixing, okay? So what we'll get, so we can define a vector as a function of time that is given by our K0 state. And K0 bar state. Okay. And then we can write down the time evolution of this guy in the following way. Now, of course, we have to be careful now, as you said, to put the right time evolution, okay? And now, this guy here is simply a 2×2 matrix. In general, I can write it down as so this is, of course, the most general 2×2 matrix that I can write down that is complex. I'm denoting this as an M and this as a gamma because actually we'll see in the following that these are related to the masses and these are related to the widths of our state, as you can already guess. So actually, this matrix has to be Hermitian and with positive eigenvalues. So Hermitianity is telling us that actually we have some relation between these quantities. Namely, we have that M21 is equal to M12 conjugate. And say it again?
You've got an I on it, so we need to have gamma 2 1 equals minus gamma 2.
So I think, so if you put this, yeah. Yeah, thanks for, yeah. And then also, at home you can see what happens if you apply a CPT transformation on this, okay? We know that this system has to be invariant under CPT. And this will tell us that actually M11 is equal to M22. I will call it M. And then the same for this. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Is that not just zero? Because if it's emission, those you kind of imaginary terms in the leading guy.
No, actually not, right? So you can have a complex matrix, apply CPT, and still have complex.
Those are matrices, not just numbers.
No, actually, so these are numbers. So this is a 2×2 matrix.
Right.
And right, right.
If it's a mission, you can't have like an imaginary term.
Sorry. Let me write it this way. So these two guys alone are a mission. Sorry if I said that the entire matrix is emission. So these two guys, M and gamma, are emission. Then you apply this, you get this. And then you apply CPT, and you get these properties. Sorry, it was very confusing as I said it, I think. Yeah, right. So basically, we can now simplify quite a bit. Yes?
Why is it? Shouldn't the Hamiltonian be emission? Shouldn't the Hamiltonian be emission? We'd expect that.
So you agree with me that if you write this matrix here with these properties, you get the right properties for your Hamiltonian. Is that right? So let me write the form. Probably it's clearer if I write down the Hamiltonian. So the Hamiltonian with these properties will be equal to so do you agree with me that this is a fair Hamiltonian, right?
It's not an emission.
So just a second. So let me. So maybe I'm messing up some signs. So probably, yeah. No. So
the condition for gamma 1, 2 different? Like gamma 1, 2 conjugate is minus gamma 2, 1 or something?
No, actually, so these I've already used here. So as you see, I've eliminated this 2, 1, gamma 2, 1 for gamma 1, 2.
You need plus sign in order to
right. Yeah, probably. So yeah, let me look up to make sure of that I'm making it, that I'm doing it right with the signs. Yeah, and then yeah, actually, so the hour if it's finished, I can take it from here from tomorrow, right? And then tomorrow, what we'll see is actually the evolution of our K-on system using this Hamiltonian. And we see that actually the mass eigenstates of these systems are not the same thing as the CP eigenstates. Okay? Yeah, sorry.